You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 29th September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we chat with Derek Yanser from Rensburg. The banking index up almost 6%, and then some results also coming out. Daniel Flynn on conscious capitalism, the art of doing good. Nick Smith, FMI head of production and pricing, assessing risks in order to extend cover. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines: MoneyWeb, steep rise in poultry prices expected. And from Business Day, a battered Remgro questions strength of SA's rebound. Excuse me. Morning markets, US is green overnight again. S&P up 1.6%, NASDAQ up 1.9%. Asia green, but only just. Sydney up 0.2% and Turkey up 0.1%. Commodities mixed, with oil a little weaker. Gold $1,888 an ounce. Rand 1702 against the US dollar. And top 40 calling for a green opening, up 0.4%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking now with Derek Yanser from Rensburg. He's a portfolio manager, Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. A bit of a melt-up in our markets yesterday, particularly the FINI 15 index, which of course actually includes some property as well in there, up 5.6%. And then I go look at the chart of the index, and we did this exact thing early September, and then it all came back. I mean, in essence, markets seem to get very excited and then seem to lose interest again quite quickly.
Yeah, obviously quite nice to see a bit of a bounce in the SA Inc. space. And, you know, we've spoken about this previously, as you mentioned, and it's quite nice to actually start to see the buying coming into our market, even if it is from time to time, and we trade in these tight ranges. I think one needs to also be cognizant of the fact that, just given our, or call it the state of our market, the liquidity environment means that it doesn't take too much to actually move these stocks, whether it's to the upside or to the downside. But obviously quite a strong move yesterday in the banking stocks. It looked like a big global basket of buying coming into the ETA in space. As you mentioned, picking up some of the property stocks, probably going to be short-lived and continue to trade in a sort of tight range and moving sideways. So let's see where we go from here.
Yeah, you make a great point there. And, you know, to some big bank, they come in with what for them is, you know, probably a, you know, small, modest allocation. You bring it into Czar, it's giant. They kind of drive everything, and then they've now got what they want, and markets sort of resettled back to these levels, and it's all as if it didn't happen. And that story just happens again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really the key is, you know, you just get a big global basket of buying, buttons get pushed, easy to push the stocks to the upside, and then that sort of buying and that interest starts to dry up and, you know, things come back to normality. You know, the long and short of it is fundamentally, I can't see a catalyst that takes the likes of a First Rand, for example, back up to 50 or 55 Rand in the short term. So I would sort of pencil in, you know, tight ranges that these things are going to continue to trade in, you know, sort of between 44-ish, 45 on First Rand and the lower 36 levels, and that's what we've seen for quite some time now.
Yeah, great point. Looking at that chart, and it's pretty much gone sideways for much of this pandemic. So some numbers out yesterday, Remgro, I mean, we get insight to a lot of it, of course, because, you know, a lot of their assets are listed. They're a holding company. What struck me, intrinsic net asset value, they're pricing it at, let's call it 155. The share closed just over 90 Rand. That's more than a 40% discount. Do you look at that and sort of think to yourself, ah, oh, great, a cheap entry into some known assets, you know, whether you like them or not? Or is this more sort of head scratching and you're wondering if this sort of holding structure is maybe past its sell by date?
Well, I think we can certainly all agree that these holding structures have not been all that they've played out to be. Obviously, trading at deep discounts, Remgro is not the only one. You know, I guess looking at a very long-term view, one would think that holding structures would sort of come back to par value or call it NAV at some point in time. But obviously, you need good markets and good, you know, sentiment and risk appetite towards equities. I think that Remgro is a little bit different in that they do have some listed assets which can sort of unbundle and give you net asset value quite quickly. Obviously, some non-core unlisted assets within the stable, but really the point is a bit different to the likes of African Rainbow Capital, where you've got a basket of good quality assets but unlisted.
Yeah.
So trading at a discount, and rightly so. So I think you know, with a very long-term view, Remgro does look actually quite interesting, and it's just really because of the listed assets that could potentially unbundle to shareholders as you start to see the board try and pull levers to unlock value for shareholders.
We chatted last week. One of the stocks that you mentioned was Alviva, previously was Pinnacle. Results out, solid results, awesome cash generation, a really nice little operation. The market liked the numbers. And you know, one of those SA Inc. stocks that's kind of got its head down and getting on with the business of you know, turning a profit. There was pressure, of course there was. Tough year for them, but a nice little business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, in this kind of market, if you're willing to spend the time, you can scratch through the listed equity space and really find some good quality businesses and some gems trading at some really decent multiples. So, you know, you might not see the share prices tick up in the very short term, but it certainly is a market where you can pick up quality assets. And Alviva ticks the boxes, as I mentioned it last week. And I think, as rightly what you say, cash generation was extremely strong, and that's really what I was excited about or looking forward to seeing. And I certainly think that the business is well positioned to kind of weather the pandemic, weather the COVID sort of crisis that we've been exposed to, and move forward from here. So I think, you know, on the multiple that it's trading at the moment, it's too cheap, and I think that should pick up over time. I'm a happy long-term shareholder in Alviva at these levels.
Yeah, as you said, they do some digging. There's some real quality on the market, particularly in the SA Inc. space. Might not shoot the lights out, but it's going to be a worthy long-term hold. Derek Janse van Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital, appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Daniel Flynn, he's MD and co-founder of Thank You. And if you're wondering what Thank You is, that's what we're going to find out now. I suppose, in a sense, conscious capitalism. Before we get to that, Daniel, morning, appreciate your time. What is Thank You? You're an Australian group. You founded about 12 years ago. Give us the quick sort of high level of what you're doing and how you work in this conscious capitalism.
Look, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's great to be in South Africa from Melbourne, Australia. Look, we're a social enterprise and we sell consumer product like hand wash and sanitizer, and that exists all for the end of extreme poverty. So after every cent involved in, you know, making a great product and getting it to market, the rest goes to our impact partners who, you know, working around the world to help, you know, end extreme poverty through water projects, through health, sanitation. And it's a really simple way for consumers to combine that little purchase power they have in their everyday, you know, choice, be it a hand wash or lotion. We have now 50 products in our range. And, you know, we've started in Australia and New Zealand and kind of dreaming of taking it further.
I mean, in essence, I mean, what's important here is, you know, these are quality products. This isn't saying to someone, you know, please support us because, you know, because we want to help people. This is saying we've got a good product for you, and if you buy it, it actually helps. We're going to take, instead of, you know, go and buy ourselves fancy motor vehicles or whatever, you know, apartments in Melbourne, the money then goes back into communities in need.
Yeah, that's it. And we, you know, we have on our office, well, these two rules. Rule one, make great product. Mm-hmm. Rule two, never break rule one. And there's a little asterisk on rule two that says never use a good cause to sell an average product. So, Simon, I think for us it's about make a great product that exists all for a purpose. And you've got a combination that today we've raised $17 million here in Australia, and that's money for our partners around the world, which is a great start.
And now the trick is, and why we're chatting, I mean, in essence, you're now trying to take this more global. You've got a hand sanitizer product, which obviously has been, you know, literally flying off shelves, I imagine, over the last 6 months of pandemic. And I suppose what you've run into now is the sort of, I mean, red tape. Maybe that's not quite the right phrase, but in order to get your product more global and to get support of the sort of big FMCG firms is a massively complex and regulatory sort of process to you know, get onto shelves globally.
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, it's taken us 12 years to kind of establish this social enterprise, or you called it conscious capitalism type model in Australia and New Zealand. And I think what's happened with the pandemic globally is it's set the world's poor back even further. Mm-hmm. You know, those living in extreme poverty are facing an even tougher situation. World Food Programme have said there is 250 million people on the brink of starvation. So the world's in a tough spot. And in the last few months, while all that has happened, thank you. I mean, we made more money than we'd ever made. We made over $10 million from hand sanitizer sales. And so we've launched this campaign that's a simple call out to the world saying, hey, everyone, we've got a model that's working, but imagine if this could be in your country. And because it's 2020, you know, we think business as usual is out the window and we need to boldly forge new paths forward. And so in this campaign, we have just invited two of the biggest product companies on the planet, P&G and Unilever. Now, they used to be our competitors. But we're actually inviting them saying, hey, what if you helped make and distribute thank you products to over 190 countries, you know, make this together? We could work to end extreme poverty. We know that purpose matters to them. It matters to us. And moving forward, should we compete or should we actually work together to, you know, solve an injustice that should not exist?
That's a great point. And I mean, these sort of companies, and more than just Procter & Gamble, Unilever, broadly, these large multinational global companies, they talk the talk. And what you're kind of saying to them is, you know, okay, you talk the talk, but now actually come and, you know, put your money where it matters. Actually, you know, let's get real here. Let's partner up. And to really throw the cliches out, now actually go and walk that walk rather than just talk it, which is truthfully the easy half of the equation.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, we're all in on purpose. We've seen them talk about it. We've seen them take some bold steps and we're willing to kind of rethink our whole way of working. You know, and if you're listening in thinking, how on earth does the partnership work? We've modeled this partnership off some pretty common partnerships in business called license agreements. But, you know, there's a few examples around the world, like the Starbucks coffee pod is actually made and distributed by Nestle into, you know, shopping centers and supermarkets all around the world. We didn't know that at first, but we're like, wow, look at two companies combining each what they have to, you know, create a win-win scenario. Adidas do it as they make and distribute Kanye's brand Yeezy and the Yeezy shoes. We thought, man, if the world can do that sort of model and make billions of dollars for shareholders, why not turn that same key for this product? Thank you that breathes in profit and breathes out social impact. And it's a bold idea, but, you know, we think the world needs large scale change now.
Yeah, I take your point. Large-scale change. And, you know, truthfully, for Unilever, Procter & Gamble and other large corporates, you know, they're going to give up a small amount of profit. But let's be quite clear here. For them, it's a small amount of profit. But for the needy, poor people out there in our broader communities, it is life-changing.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I think what's really interesting, you know, in Australia, we compete with these big multinationals. So thank you as a product range. We have the number one hand wash on shelf. We have a really strong competitive threat, really, to some of these big companies. And so what we're saying is if we took our traditional path and went around the world and launched this, well, we'd be taking your market share and therein goes their money and their profit and we'd be helping make a difference. But what if instead of doing that, you help make and distribute it? We already pay, you know, manufacturers and distributors already in a local scale. Mm. Now we're just taking that to a global scale. And it's a way that they make their money, but most importantly, thank you is money that we get as a brand. We'll go on to see $17 million that's been raised turn into literally hundreds of millions of dollars very quickly.
Daniel Flynn, he's MD, co-founder. Thank you. Appreciate your time. And I wish you all the best. And I hope, I know you're doing a social media campaign. I hope it really takes off. And I hope we can see it in South Africa and Unilever and Procter & Gamble come to the party. Really appreciate your early morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Nick Smith. He's FMI Head of Product and Pricing. Nick, appreciate your early morning. I've been chatting with some of your colleagues over the last few months around the sort of products being offered, particularly in terms of sort of the more niche space, moving away from the traditional sort of occupation cover, moving into those niche areas. One of the things that strikes me, though, is as you move into, you know, suddenly freelancers and commission urging people, I mean, it must be a different, very much a different process for you and your team to price these, to model these as you get out of that traditional sort of actuarial models.
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a bit of a journey. We've in 2015, we created a whole new version of income protection called event-based cover. And at the time, that allowed us to cover occupations that couldn't get income protection at all. People like professional athletes, musicians, oil rig workers, dancers, students, etc., etc. And at the time, it was pretty revolutionary. We were inventing a whole new product that didn't exist before, and we had to consider risks that would never really we didn't really have access to this kind of cover before. And recently, we've seen a trend in applications around people who don't not necessarily perform that risky occupation, but they earn their income in a different way. So you've talked about people who have side hustles, people who work as contract workers, freelancers, and anyone who earns their income or works more inconsistently. And it's these types of people who insurers often aren't able to offer any income protection to. And what we've been doing recently is we've relooked at all the rules that we use up front to assess risk around occupations and how consistent people work. And we've now in a position to offer these people income protection or the event-based version of the product, and we can now cover a wider spectrum of people than ever before.
And in essence, I mean, the one question then as well, you know, you're covering more occupations. This increases number of claims. But in truth, insurance, and I'm going to offend all the actuaries out there, but I'm a complete novice here. It really is about running the numbers and making sure your process is robust. And then you are in a space where actually you can cover this and it works out.
Yeah. I'm glad you talked about claims because it's important that before you launch anything, you have to make sure that you're able to honor that promise of being able to pay claims. And as an insurer, we're in the business of paying those claims. We spent a lot of time in this recent launch making sure that we were able to cover more people than ever. But whatever we had to cover them with, we had to make sure that they would have the same claims experience as our existing policyholders. So we do have to crunch a lot of numbers. We do have to make sure that what we're offering is sustainable. But most importantly, it's a lot about making sure that when we sell a policy to someone, we're able to pay a claim when they need it.
You mentioned the process there. If I'm a traditional sort of salaried individual, you know, I just, you know, send a salary slip in, and that's nice and simple. I imagine this is I want to say more complicated, but perhaps a little more paperwork. If I'm a freelancer or the like, you know, in order for me to prove my earnings as I'm taking out that insurance policy.
Yeah, you're 100% right. When it comes to someone who's salaried, insurers are a lot more comfortable with that because, as you say, you have a salary slip and that income is consistent, and that means that traditional income protection works well. But when you are working inconsistently, you're a freelancer or you have a side hustle which means half your income comes from income work that you do in the evenings or the weekend, how do you prove that income? How are you able to demonstrate that you're working consistently? And insurers worry about that. That's what keeps them up at night. And unfortunately, the traditional income protection product and the traditional way of looking at people doesn't really work. So we've had to be creative with looking at how we assess those risks. How do you determine whether a side hustle is consistent or sustainable? And then how do you determine how consistent that is in order to determine what product you offer? It's been a really interesting journey, and I think we've come up with some really creative solutions.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting journey. We'll leave that there. Nick Smith, he is Head of Product and Pricing at FMI. Appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or app. Podcast from 7 a.m. on the website, the app, or wherever you get high-quality podcasts. The show proudly sponsored by FMI, division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early mornings. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.